day off. If any politicians had any brains, Super Bowl Monday. It's the Fan Morning Show. I'm J.D. Bunkus, alias 4-Far Blake Murphy. Sportsnet 5-9 The Fan. Good morning. How are we feeling today? A little Super Bowl food and drink. Tough one to get up this morning, or what? Everybody's good?
I just feel happy. Like a slug.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a sluggish
like
day.
A slug. Just like I ate too much food, too many chips, too many different flavors. Just feel sluggish.
I feel great. I was very excited to wake up and come on this morning. I'm a pro. I know how
You're an athlete.
I know how to lay out my wings and beer over the course of a day so that you're feeling good for 6 a.m.
Yeah. I was ready to say, I don't do chips a lot on Super Bowl Sunday. I think it's kind of a waste. I don't want to get all controversial at the top.
You know how
of the
many
show,
chips I had to eat, though? People sending me chips and just like, I have to do it. It's part of the brand.
Well, you know, some people feel like when you get an excess of things that you should share the excess. Others, such as yourself, who's been branded as this good person, and the vibes coordinator of the show gets 45 bags of chips, doesn't even sprinkle a chip outside of her own apartment. But that's fine.
Correct.
Again, it's just different views.
I'm not doing this as a bit and to pile on here. Someone actually messaged me yesterday and asked why I don't get stuff. Because someone sent me Ailish's Instagram stories. Like, how come you don't get anything?
Yeah.
Like, that's a good question.
You know what, though? I got to tell you, now I'm a little worried that there's some person out there that's trying to sow division amongst the members of the team, because I think I got the same exact message at one point.
Maybe it's the same person sending it to you.
I was going
to
say, I think this is some weird power play move by some person out there, potentially from another show. You know, this is they've seen the podcast downloads. They've seen the ratings, which, again, subscribe to this podcast. Do us a favor. Leave 5 stars. Do all those kind of things. But, yeah, and now it's a bit of sabotage. So, Super Bowl 56 in the books. A billion things to talk about this game. The Los Angeles Rams are Super Bowl champions, 23-20. The Cincinnati Bengals, So close to exercising the demons. You're right there. And so many things happened in this game. Like, I ran down a few of the items with you guys that I wrote down in my notes that we probably won't even be able to get to, or some of the things that we won't be able to even get to. And yet I can't help but feel like if you're a Bengals fan, obviously this is the moment where you realize, hey, not getting here doesn't matter. Who cares about getting here? Winning this thing matters. Now you're 0-3. You join the Bills 0-4 and the Vikings 0-4 on that list of losers. But the Rams get it done with Cooper Kupp on a final drive, just dominating Matthew Stafford and Aaron Donald. And it looks like the Rams, they come through. Their stardom, the Rams story, ends up being the great one. Cooper Kupp ends up winning MVP. Blake, I'll start with you. What was the story of the game for you?
I mean, I know you want to talk a lot about Cooper Kupp, so I'll kind of leave that to the side. I think it confirmed everything we've been talking about the last couple weeks, though, of, you know, hey, it's kind of silly that you can't give the MVP to a wide receiver when he's clearly the most valuable player on that team. For me, I don't know. I thought it was, for a game that got framed a lot around the coaching and these two young coaches, and McVay had just overcome Shanahan, I don't like to start with a negative off of this, but I thought it was a pretty poorly coached game both ways. And I thought that the Rams kind of won in spite of McVay and not because he had a great game plan, or like, it took them until the third quarter to start getting to Joe Burrow. They had, not to disrespect all my analytics buds, but everyone's tweeting out a million advanced rushing stats. It's like, no, they had 23 rushing attempts for 43 yards. You don't need advanced stuff for that. You average less than 2 yards a pop, and you keep running it into a brick wall. You know, you don't really spam the triangle button for Cooper Kupp until you absolutely have to. I don't know. The way that game played out, the Rams could have won that game by 14, I think, if you run that back. So I was, I don't think it's the anointing of McVay. He'll get it, obviously, because he's 36 and won the Super Bowl, and he has a good track record overall. But I was pretty underwhelmed with the coaching battle in this one.
Yeah, I thought both guys were pretty underwhelming. And yeah. It was a reminder of where McVay's stock is. Someone put it, like, he's the youngest coach to ever win a Super Bowl. He's 36 mm-hmm. years old. So that's how history will remember him. But that guy was the golden child of the NFL. He was one of the faces of the NFL's offensive revolution to more passing. Just a few years ago, you'll remember that game against the Kansas City Chiefs. I think it was a Monday night game or a Sunday night game, one of the two. It was a one-off where those two teams went head-to-head, scored a million points, and we all said, this is the future, and the future is Patrick Mahomes and Sean McVay. And, yeah, both those performances, Niners and the game against the Bengals, I would argue he was less than good. Like, there were a moment in that game you go, all right, I know you lost Odell Beckham Jr., but should one receiver injury completely tank your offense? Like,
especially
Rams,
when he's a guy you added late, right? Like, yeah. That, he wasn't part of the game plan entering the season.
Yeah, it was my biggest reason for why I thought Kupp deserved the MVP over Aaron Donald was the defense felt hot as a unit throughout that second half. They really dominated that Bengals defensive line. You knew when the game was on the line that it all came down to Cooper Kupp. And yes, did Matthew Stafford make that one brilliant throw where, it's been replayed a million times now, but leading Kupp perfectly, freezing the linebacker, mm-hmm. making that massive play down the field for about 20 yards on the final drive. But man, Cooper Kupp was just the entire offense. You knew they were just going to feed it to him. You knew they were going to lose with him. He even gets cracked. I don't know how he didn't go off the field when he took that play, the hit to the head, how that wasn't flagged. I was okay with it because I'm more of the whatever. I'm not a concussion doctor, but I just thought, whoa, that's not something that I'm used to seeing. Someone get hit that hard and not at least go to a blue tent for a check-in. But they went right back to him. They went, who cares? You got cracked at a million miles per hour. You took just a penalty. We're coming right back to you, Cooper Kupp, and there will be success because you're our entire offense right now.
Yeah, and I think even like some of the penalty fortune they got on that last drive hammer that home even more, where like if you don't get those penalties and we can relitigate a couple of those, especially the one hold. But, like, Stafford threw a couple bad balls that got basically saved by either a flag or a flag later in that drive. He's doing the Stafford thing of throwing absolute bullets out the back of the end zone that are uncatchable. And it's only when he goes to Kupp does that stuff work. And so Stafford has, obviously, the big arm. He threw for almost 300 yards in that game. He had three touchdowns. Stafford's not a bad quarterback, especially arm skill wise, but it looks a lot better when it's going to Cooper Kupp and it's that guy hauling him in. And you know, we were a little split. I know you were heavy in the Cooper Kupp MVP props and I was on Aaron Donald. So I was kind of hoping you got it stolen from you there. And look, Donald had two sacks, three quarterback hits, four tackles. It wouldn't have been the worst thing, but yeah, I think you're right that was more of a win for the defense than any individual.
Yeah, I'll get into the Cooper Kupp stuff in a bit, but Ailish, I'll kick it over to you. Like, what do you think the story of the game was for you?
I think the story of the game was that we kind of knew how this was going to play out. We talked about it all last week. Joe Burrow got sacked 7 times, 6 out of 7 of the times were in the second half. When the Bengals needed a big play in the fourth quarter, Rams D-line broke through, ruined that chance. Kupp was the best player, as we had talked about all week. Yeah. You know, 90-plus yards, 2 touchdowns, showed up when it mattered most. Stafford, you know, we were unsure if he was going to be great or sketchy. He was kind of both. He threw 2 interceptions, but also made big plays when it mattered most. I just feel like those are the things that we talked about that were going to beat the Bengals all week. You know, the D-line, if Joe Burrow gets sacked, and what Matt Stafford does and what Cooper Kupp does. And I feel like all of those things just kind of happened, right? There was nothing shocking from yesterday's game. I never sat there being like, oh my God, like we had not predicted that this was going to happen. I just feel like we either the game was going to go super in favor of the Bengals or not. And, you know, on my prediction on Friday, I was like, I'm going to go all in on the Bengals because I think it'll be a better storyline than everything that we already laid out. And it kind of just happened that all the things that we thought were going to happen basically happened.
I thought that this was going to be a blowout, and I would say that the only things that were shocking to me were ended up being these massive plays by the Bengals, right? They get the touchdown scored against them early in the game, and then they respond because Ja'Marr Chase makes one of the greatest catches in the Super Bowl I've ever seen. It reminded me of the Julio Jones catch against the Patriots that gets forgotten because the Patriots came back and won 27-3. That Jamar Chase catch against Jalen Ramsey, I feel like that one is going to get lost in the game's history. If the Bengals find a way to win that Super Bowl, we're looking at that Jamar Chase catch a billion times over. And in fact, did you guys see the stills of the images on the final play of the game?
Not yet, no.
And by the final play of the game, I mean the final Burrow throw, okay? Like, not the kneel downs. Jamar Chase was wide open. He burned Jalen Ramsey again. If Joe Burrow has a split second more and gets a peek down the field, he airs it out for a touchdown to Jamar Chase. It's heartbreaking for Bengals fans. I saw it, and I know it is one of those things where it's all the design is a it doesn't matter. He's wide open. He's wide open down the field. Jamar Chase is right there. The Bengals also have another big play in that game. That's T. Higgins on a pretty clear offensive PI where he just sort of rips Ramsey's helmet around and scores a 75-yard touchdown to start the second half. And that's why if I was a Bengals fan, I thought you couldn't be too upset with the phantom holding call. Yes, the phantom holding call was egregious, but it was a little
bit of
evened
a... evened out.
Yes,
like it was a makeup. Play. Yeah, it was, I think, a makeup call. If they do that in the NFL, they did it last night.
Yeah, a 75-yard touchdown pass against Jalen Ramsey that gets missed on a penalty is a pretty big break for you. So, yeah, I did kind of feel like the Bengals were who we thought they were a mm-hmm. little bit. Like, the game, to me, was exciting because it was close. Not so much that it was exciting because it was a real back and forth or you really thought the Bengals deserved to be there. It always felt like the Bengals were just kind of holding on for dear life and that they were so unbelievably fortunate. Like, how many times did they get the ball with an opportunity to really put the Rams away, to really put pressure on the Rams and make it a game where they were up at least a touchdown that would have forced the overtime? They didn't need the drive or they could have gone for the game-winning drive and they just could barely pick up a first down, right? Where there were dropped passes, there were sacks, there was a little bit of effective running play, but ultimately it just felt like they were trying to burn the clock out from the fourth quarter onwards, and that's never really a good sign.
It's a tough one, and, you know, the Burrow thing is a tough thing to address, right? And I saw some people be like, well, this is why you need to draft an offensive lineman. It's like, okay, but then there's no Jamar Chase open to throw to anyway. Burrow could have all the time in the world. No one else is leaving Jalen Ramsey, like, literally diving for the ankles. Like, oh, no! It's a pretty obvious next step for them is you gotta shore up that offensive line, and it's a pretty good offensive line class in free agency. I don't have the Bengals cap sheet in front of me to see what they can do.
They've got a ton of cap space.
Okay, well, that's
the only
that's
reason
a good
I know
thing,
this
then.
Is without I can look at it blind is because my brother is a huge Baltimore Ravens fan and he has expressed his anxiety about this offseason for the Bengals multiple times, whereas the Ravens are tied up against the salary cap and they don't have any room.
Here's the other takeaway for the Bengals is that you better use it effectively because we talked a lot about how, hey, the Bengals are the flag bearers of the parity in the NFL where you could be a really bad team and a couple years later, your number one pick has you in the Super Bowl. And hey, maybe this team wasn't even that great all season and managed to get through, which is great for the NFL and great for the other fan bases. But if you're the Bengals, this was maybe your opportunity, right? Like, are you going to face a shakier opponent in the Super Bowl than the Rams probably? And like, man, and Ailish, not to twist the knife, but
yes, I thought about it all night long. Don't worry, I knew exactly where you were going. They would have put up 50 points.
I saw that everywhere, these Bills fans crying about how they would have won the Super Bowl. I'm like, what are you doing here? That's the lamest take in the history of lame takes is we would have won had we won. Like, what? No, you lost. You're all with the rest of the losers. Stop crying. Yeah. You lost.
Fifth was the fifth.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah, the Bengals have to nail this offseason, though, because the parity isn't changing. It wasn't parity until one team steps up and is the new New England Patriots. It's parity longer term, especially with all the good young quarterbacks in that conference. So, if I'm the Bengals, I'm feeling a lot of pressure to address the O-line and, I mean, maybe to get some more weapons in there. I know T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd are pretty good as a 2-3, and Uzuma was pretty banged up, but I don't know. It did seem a little bit too, like, in big play situations that Burrow was locked into Chase and everyone knew that was coming, which obviously makes a ton of sense. But if you're an opposing defensive line, that makes it a little easier to, you know, not bite on the progressions, not bite on the fakes, that kind of stuff. So
I don't know. I think that's more on Burrow, though. And
maybe.
I know he's going to escape.
And maybe that's
criticism.
A symptom of him having no time all the time, right?
Yes.
And getting hit and hurried a lot.
Yes. So I thought that it was multiple things can be true. I didn't really like the Bengals game plan throughout the second half. I thought it was kind of a tough one. I thought Burrow to start the game looked a little skittish, and that he never really had moments where I went, wow, Burrow, that was amazing by you. That was like an incredible Burrow play. There wasn't a lot of that. His receivers, I thought, made big plays. Like Chase made the big play on the first throw, and T. Higgins makes the big play by grabbing Ramsey's face mask and whipping him to the earth on the second one. Yes, I don't know. I like those Bengals weapons, and I don't know if we could even properly evaluate Burrow because the offensive line was so bad and the Rams defense was so good. The first half, though, he had time. They didn't get to him. It really was strange. Like, that one play on the sideline seemed to wake up Aaron Donald. I don't know what the hell it is, but he has those moments where, like, he gets into skirmishes with people. He had one in the Cardinals game this year, too, where he just, like, grabbed somebody by the throat and went into full Aaron Donald mode. But he gets that weird sack that I was very much paying attention to because of props, where he pushes Burrow on the sideline, gets into a skirmish, and the game sort of felt like it flipped there for that defensive unit. All of a sudden, they were just far more engaged. All of a sudden, they were all in the backfield just about every single play. Burrow's toughness can never be questioned because he went back in there after that what looked like he could be leaving the game with a knee injury. I think we're still waiting on that status. But yeah, I thought Burrow was unspectacular and that the offensive line didn't really even give us a chance to figure out what he could be because they just couldn't pass protect. There was nothing that they could do to give this guy a moment. That said, that offensive line play also really overshadows how awful Zach Taylor was. And if you want to talk about coaches being bad, sure, McVay ran the ball 23 times into a brick wall when it was not going anywhere all game long. At least I thought, okay, this guy has the excuse of he doesn't want to keep letting Stafford get hit or pressured when Stafford doesn't look great. They've lost Odell Beckham Jr., who was amazing. Could have been one of the stories of the game that they lost Odell Beckham Jr., who looked like the game's best player early on, that he was on track to win Super Bowl MVP. I think he had like 52 yards and a touchdown.
I think I had him in 52 of my bets, too, yes, so that was disappointing.
Yes, and he would have shattered his reception.
Sure would have.
They lose him, and all of a sudden they're trying to throw to Skronak and all these other guys that you've never heard of before. You realize Tyler Higbee's not in this game, and that Cooper Kupp even deserves MVP more because of the load he has to carry. But Zach Taylor, my God, three plays to get 2 yards. He throws deep downfield, takes a shot. Okay, fine. For some reason, does the thing that I'll never understand, which is coaches taking their more talented running back off the field because someone is quote-unquote the third down back, and he hands it to Samaje Perine, who hasn't made a play all season long, who doesn't have any explosion. He hands it to him up the middle, nothing. And then on fourth down, needing a yard, I don't even think that it was a little too long for a quarterback sneak, I thought, but at least have something where you can throw them off a little bit, something where you're going to make sure you get the ball in Jamar Chase's hands. Somebody that's one of the most talented guys on your team needs to get an opportunity. Shotgun. He drops him in a shotgun, and they lose the game. This all right after Sean McVay designs a fourth down play with Cooper Kupp that gives him a handoff on a jet sweep, where I go, hey, that's a risky play, but you put the ball in your best player's hands in the play that matters the most in the game. And for Zach Taylor, his deciding plays were Samaje Perine and shotgun Joe Burrow in front of an offensive line that obviously was going to give him no time versus the adrenaline of Aaron Donald, who is on the precipice of winning a Super Bowl. You really didn't think Aaron Donald was going to get home in that situation? Of course he was going to get home. So yeah, Zach Taylor, I really do think was one of the stories of the game. I thought he bailed out the referees on that holding call because we would have talked about it. He ruined our ability to judge Money Mac, Edmund McPherson, who probably gets an opportunity to kick if they just get one more first down to kick something that's a Super Bowl record. He takes away Joe Burrow's clutch legacy. He takes away Ja'Marr Chase's thing. Zach Taylor was putrid. That was putrid. That was genuinely... I know Pete Carroll will always be number one for taking away a Super Bowl because of the throw call, but I really thought Zach Taylor, that decision, those three calls, that was the worst thing in the Super Bowl since Pete Carroll from a coaching standpoint. I really thought so.
Back to the CFL you go, Zach.
God. Yeah.
You're out of here.
Goodbye. You're leaving the tree. So, yeah, story of the game for me was Cooper Kupp. There were a bunch of things. Like, you could make the case of Aaron Donald. Maybe it's two of them. I think Aaron Donald is going to go down as the defensive player of this generation. That's pretty clear. Him getting this Super Bowl victory and having one of the most memorable plays in the defensive line dominating the way they did.
And, like, the iconic, like, you get that sack and immediately point to your ring.
The ring, yeah.
It's
exactly. Awesome.
It's gonna be gonna be a meme forever. You know, whenever anybody wins a championship, they're gonna use the Aaron Donald thing. So I really was happy for Aaron Donald. As a Seahawks fan, I do hope he retires. Aaron, you've accomplished everything. There's no need to come back.
The way he was getting talked about, I was like, are they talking about Aaron Donald or the 40-year-old offensive lineman? Like, Aaron Donald is 30.
Kate, I got confused too. I said, wow, that guy's 45. There's no way, because they were like, memorializing them? Is that the right word? Yeah, like he was like, you know, had been in the league. He like created the league, had been there forever. And I was like, I'm confused about this. I looked it up and you're right. I thought that he was 45.
When you walk in the league and you're a Pro Bowler from day one and like maybe one of the best defensive players in the league from day one, it feels like you've been like, look, JD's a Seahawks fan. It probably feels like Aaron Donald's been around for 25
years.
That's
true.
But yeah, like I did think it was like, obviously if there's chatter that he's going to retire, then that's fine. But to the level of he's 30 years old and it's the first question he gets asked in his post Super Bowl interview.
Yeah, what?
Like that seemed a little thick. Anyway,
that's all his fault. He told Rodney Harrison before the game that he's considering retirement if they win. I don't blame the person asking them about whether he's going to retire if that's the case. And I thought it was a very strange one. If I'm Aaron Donald, I would have said the opposite to my team. If we lose this game, I'm going to retire. Why would you ever say that if I win, I'm going to retire? They go, what? Yeah. How is that?
So you're suggesting McVay's there like, oh, man, if I come through here, if we come through here, I lose my best defensive weapon.
So, yeah, this is why – but winning is just so crucial. And now, because Aaron Donald, there's no flaw, there's no hole in the resume. And that first half, when they could not get to Joe Burrow, I kept thinking, where is this defensive line? Did the Bengals' offensive line start to play just so much better? I thought one of the stories of the game we were going to have today in talking to Ross was going to be – how did they pass protect so well? How are they able to stop that defensive line that way? And then, of course, it ends up being the massive story. And then, yes, Aaron Donald saved the game, because if Burrow has a split second more, and if there's anybody other than Aaron Donald there, he probably finds Ja'Marr Chase down the field. They'd probably score a touchdown, and we're all talking about what a genius Zach Taylor is for going to shotgun on the final play of the game. But, yeah, Cooper Kupp. Cooper Kupp. Again, finished this season with 22 more receptions than Davante Adams for first in receptions. 331 more yards than Justin Jefferson for first in yards. Two more touchdown passes than Mike Evans. And again, third was Chase, surprisingly. And more 20-yard plays than Justin Jefferson. So first in all those categories. He wasn't just dominant. I get that it's a pass-catching league, so you go, oh, wow, how do you measure those stats? How do you measure touchdowns and yards and receptions in an era that is so different from passing eras of the past, right? Like, how do you contextualize this versus Jerry Rice? Well, you know how you contextualize it? By comparing that receiver to his peers, right? How dominant was someone against their peers in that era? That is the way that you should always look at professional athletes. It doesn't have to be the numbers. It's just how dominant were they compared to their peers. And oftentimes, we've discussed certain athletes who we go, well, what was the depth of field, right? How many good players were there that we could compare them to? Were they just better than the field because of who was there at the time? Or were they truly great? There has never been depth at the position like this. Look at the names that I mentioned that he was ahead of. Like, I listed them for a reason. Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, Davante Adams. Think about that. Think about when you watch a Packers game, how Davante Adams gets force-fed all game long by Aaron Rodgers, supposedly the greatest quarterback in the NFL, and Cooper Kupp finished with 22 more receptions than that guy. 22 more receptions than him. He wins Offensive Player of the Year, and yet we didn't even really consider him for MVP, despite the gap between him and his peers. Cooper Kupp.
Yeah, and the peers thing is super highlighted by the playoffs, right? Like, he goes through what was it? Mike Evans, Deebo Samuel, Ja'Marr Chase in the last 3 weeks, and becomes, and look, this is only possible if you're not a bye team, but the second player ever to have a touchdown in four straight playoff games, along with Larry Fitzgerald from 2008. So, and like, there's an element too of the quality of competition theoretically gets higher the further you go in the playoffs, and he just kept getting better. Like, two touchdowns and 142 yards in the conference championship, and then 92 and two touchdowns yesterday. And it's like toward the end of that game, every single person watching knew that Cooper Kupp was the target, and it didn't really matter.
It felt like it took a long time for them to get to that point, though. Even you tweeted out, Blake, like, you're like, wow, maybe you should have been targeting him the entire game. And it did feel like, what are we doing here? Why are you not throwing it to Cooper Kupp? But I guess that was the game plan that worked in the end.
Yeah. It was just incredible to know that the final drive, when everything mattered, Sean McVay put aside all his cute little run plays, and he just said, all the plays are funneling through Cooper Kupp. When they got down into the red zone, Stafford has those couple throws to other receivers that are awful, like the bullet over the top of, I think it was Van Jefferson in the end zone, where he misses by like 200 feet. And after that, they just went, okay. It's very clear that Stafford's confidence throwing to Cooper Kupp is just completely different. That his level of aggressiveness throwing to him and his trust that he's not going to burn him is through the roof. But yeah, Kupp to me was the MVP this year. He wins Offensive Player of the Year, which is the ultimate, oh right, that's an award. I don't even know why. It should just be called non-QB of the Year or something like that. QB of the Year is the MVP. Split up the awards. But either way, that's the greatest receiver season in the history of the NFL. And it's not even up for debate. Like, you can throw other stuff against there. I know some Niners fan is so triggered about Jerry Rice and all this. It doesn't matter. Randy Moss, it doesn't matter. That guy just won a Super Bowl as his team's best player on a team with Aaron Donald. Like, that needs to be put into perspective. And I know that some people who had Aaron Donald, Blake, like I said, okay, great. Aaron Donald was there. Aaron Donald doesn't have a chance to make that play if it's not for Cooper Kupp just dominating the way that he did on that final drive. The toughness of Cooper Kupp. He held on to that football where he got borderline concussed with that massive play. Like, he held on to the football. And it was just, oh, well, that's what it does. That's what Cooper Kupp does. And everybody expected in the building. That was a one-man show. That entire last drive, just a one-man show. It's everything with Cooper Kupp. It's the hands. It's the route running. It's the quickness. It's the toughness. All of it is just, it's just the perfect package of what you want from receivers. So depth of position, what he did this year, it's just, I know that I'm never going to see that again. I know that I'm never going to see quite that season from Cooper Kupp, from anybody. It's just impossible to envision anyone does that, where I think that they should be the MVP, and then they go on a run where they end Tom Brady's career with a huge reception down the field where they end up getting wide open, where they have those multiple, that performance against the San Francisco 49ers, where they put rivals into the grave, and then go to a Super Bowl and end up having the game-winning drive. It was just, of all their stars, Cooper Kupp rose to the top, and it was just, it was incredible. It was incredible to watch him work.
It makes us want to recircle that conversation of giving non-quarterbacks MVP in the season. You don't think that that will ever happen, even after something like this?
No, I think now it's even harder to do it. I really do. I think when you have this precedent of, well, you didn't give it to this receiver during this year, how are you supposed to give it to someone else in another year? Like, what do you have to do?
It's something I want to ask. We have Charles Davis on a Monday instead of a Friday this week. And he,
what a treat.
Yeah, he has one of the Associated Press MVP votes. I want to get his perspective on, hey, if not, and I don't know who he voted for this year. Maybe he did vote for Cooper Kupp, but it'll be interesting to hear his perspective on, hey, what would it take if not this? Now, I do, I worry that if you go, like, if you say, well, we can't vote for a wide receiver next year because Cooper Kupp didn't get it in this dramatic wide receiver season, like that's chase betting, right? That's like we made a mistake and we're gonna remedy that mistake by making more mistakes. Mm-hmm. It'll look bad in retrospect, but it's gonna look bad in retrospect anyway that Cooper Kupp didn't win this one. So
I think it's just more about the mindset, Blake. Like I just think it's more about the mindset than anything else. That it's not you're doubling down and going with that, but it's just more that if you didn't do it now, then it clearly shows you where most voters' heads are at, which is, but the quarterback is just so much more valuable, and it's the most valuable award. And if you took out the quarterback, where's the value? And, I don't see it. I think that it's just a quarterback award from now on. I have so many other things I want to do. Maybe we'll put the halftime show stuff in the A-list. I don't know. Because I really want to talk about halftime. I also wanted to... Like, my first question in my notes was, how much did The Rock get paid? I think he had to get $1 million for that, right?
At least $1 million. Did you see his arms, first of all?
I mean, he looked, The Rock.
No, like, he looked even more jacked than I had remembered. Yeah. That was like, wow, what a day.
So, my wrestling brain with this one is that it wasn't about the payday. The Rock is like now the chief investor in the XFL resurgence, and they're targeting an early 2022 launch. Mm-hmm. I kind of think this is the start of an XFL-NFL relationship, and that's why The Rock did it, was to get his name and face back into the football conversation ahead of the XFL relaunch.
You know what that was
Which,
for?
By the way, money. Someone
that
with
was
the Raptors
for the money and the fact that he's The Rock, and they went. We did the Michael Buffer thing last week. We can't do the Michael Buffer thing 2 weeks in a row. Who else can we get? The Rock is the biggest celebrity on the planet. Yeah. And so they went to him and they said, hey, Rock, can you please do this? Your movie, your Hollywood, this feels Hollywood. It was very cringe. I thought it was one of the first times where I thought The Rock is no longer cool. I felt bad for him. Like, I thought that, hey, this... Why are you going on so long, Rock? It almost felt like he forgot the Bengals were there, too, when he did the Bengals party. He's like, and then over here, the Bengals are here, too, guys. It was just like, it was crappy all around. I'm sorry, Rock. I don't mean to trash you, but it wasn't very good. I didn't think it was very good. Outside your arms, Ailish, you're right. The arms were popping. The arms
were popping.
Popping, all right? Other than that, don't know. Also, did I ever tell you about my wrestling fan friend who believes that like no wrestlers didn't take steroids and The Rock never took steroids?
Come on.
Yes.
No.
That's even worse than believing the outcomes are real.
I know. That was a tough one. Okay, so we'll do the halftime show.
Just show him a picture of Scott Steiner one time.
I know. But yeah, The Rock. He's like, he does it all in the up and up. It's diet. I'm like, okay.
It's diet.
So,
he
quickly.
Eats steroids.
Before we break, we just got to touch on the Leafs quick here. Because the Leafs have a weekend where they lose another game, but it seems like nobody cared because they won the shot battle, and there's that dumb old, hey, the Leafs deserve
getting
to win
goalied. Getting
they
goalied.
They got goalied, so nobody cares. It's like, I don't know.
Now, I love this, though. We get to play that side when the Leafs lose, but when the U.S. soccer team brings it up, it's like, you dorks,
right.
That doesn't matter at all.
I don't know. You lost
that
the game.
That stuff only matters when it helps your point.
You lost the game and your goaltender, I guess. Listen, everyone's now litigating shots again and goals again with the goaltender. What are bad goals? What are good goals? Should he have controlled the rebound better on the third one? I don't know. Thatcher Demko played great in that game, but you have a couple of plays early where they go in the back of your net, and one of them is Justin Hall again on a really, really aggressively bad turnover who doesn't do anything after that. We have Justin Bourne later at 9 o'clock today, and I don't want to really get into this. It's just something because we'll tee this up and we'll have this conversation later. But, yeah, was there a real concern in that for you guys? Because, I don't know. The early stuff really did feel bad and it hung over the game, and it was a couple of things where you go, the goaltending is not quite good enough and the blue line keeps making these bad mistakes, and that's a reminder, like, those things are always going to be there for the Leafs. So, like, outshoot people all you want, but the playoffs often come down to who has the hot goalie, and it's just kind of a reminder of how stupid this sport can be and how... Yeah, I didn't really feel great about that Leafs loss. I didn't look at it as the process versus results one like I normally do.
Yeah, I didn't. I obviously thought it was a shaky
weird
game,
one. And
to have two of those in a row is a little bit of a red flag. At the same time, like, they haven't lost two games in regulation in a row in forever. Like, it's a long season, and these little dips will probably happen. If I'm pulling anything out of it, like, we've obviously we know that the back half of the defensive rotation is an issue. I haven't thought the second lines looked very good of late, and that's something I want to dig in with on Bourne as well, is what's mm-hmm. going on there, and is there a solution to that that doesn't involve breaking up the red hot Marner Matthews pairing. So yeah, that's what stood out to me. It's a disappointing one, but process wise, yeah, that second line looks iffy right now.
I think two things can be true, and Keith said it in a good way after the game. He said, "I didn't like the start. To me, it's a self-inflicted loss." And I think that's also acknowledging the fact that, hey, Thatcher Demko played out of his mind, but if they hadn't gone down 2-0 at the beginning of the game, it could have been a much different outcome. So, yeah. You know, he put some of that on the Leafs having a slow start, which is completely an issue that you can't have against a hot goaltender. And maybe the stars aligned where, hey, bad start and hot goaltender, and you're playing from behind the rest of the game. So I liked his comments, self-inflicted loss. You know, that's on you. You can't just put everything on the other team having a stellar goaltending and say, well, we'll get him next time. It's like, when had the Leafs had that situation that we could say, hey, you know what, they deserve to maybe lose that game, but our goaltender stood on his head. That hasn't been the case in quite a while. So it'd be nice to be on the other side of the conversation one day where you're like, we goalied somebody else, but that just hasn't been the conversation.
Yeah, Ehlers, that's bang on what you just said. That's it. That's why I felt weird in that game. Is one, it was the way they lost is because of slow starts, which has been an old issue, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the blue line making bad mistakes where you give them A1 opportunities, that's an old issue. And then not having the better goaltender, you checked basically Leafs bingo for reasons that you can have anxiety. And so as good as they did play throughout the rest of that game, and as much as there was the 5-on-5 shot share that just started to tilt from basically the first period onward, those three things being problem issues, they just felt very familiar, you know? And so, yes, it's not really that big of a dip. It's the regular season. We're judging this team, blah, 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 blah. But those three things all coinciding together, yes, it was just something that, you feel like that's what you've been living with now as a Leaf fan for a couple of years. What are we looking forward to tonight?
Yes, the Olympics are still rolling along, and your girls, the Canadian Olympic women's hockey team, is going for gold, but that's not tonight. So it's time for Road to the Podium, brought to you by CertainTeed, the pro's choice for roofing, siding, drywall, insulation, and ceiling systems. CertainTeed, pro all the way. So yes, the Canadian women's hockey team clinched last night while we were sleeping a 10-3 win over the Swiss to advance to the gold medal game, which will be Wednesday. They didn't cover the spread that we had bet on, unfortunately. 10-3 was probably the closest game that they've had so far, but that's all right. Maybe they're holding it up for the big game. And we'll know who Canada will play in one of the things I have on the to-watch list today on Monday. So semifinal hockey, USA versus Finland women's team today at 8. So, you know, it's pretty much a predicted outcome that the United States will beat Finland and face Canada in the gold medal game. But if you want to see the last opportunity to watch USA before that, that's today at 8 a.m. Before that, we have women's curling, Canada versus Great Britain. That's still round robin action. That's in just about 20 minutes at 7 a.m., followed by that USA-Finland game that I mentioned at 8. And then this evening, a couple things to watch as well. Men's curling, Canada versus China. That's round robin action at 8 p.m. And then one of our new favorite sports, women's big air snowboard. The final is tonight at 8:30 p.m. And there are also two Canadians in the running for medals. So that's a really great sport. We've talked about it. We love it. Big air has been really cool to watch. Two Canadians have a chance at a medal this evening. So that's kind of the look at ahead at today's sports. You can have a little Valentine's viewing with your lover. Sit there and you watch Canada win gold. It could be a beautiful, beautiful night.
I'll tell you this right now, fellas. Don't take Alex's advice on this. Oh, well, a girl said that this would be good for Valentine's Day. We watch gold women's big air together. Like, don't take that advice.
You light a candle.
There's nothing more romantic than Gushu in a high-pressure spot.
It's right.
You know, there's just there's nothing
beautiful.
Better.
Okay. Blake and I were very much on corner of second number two event for us at the Olympics is curling.
Mm-hmm.
Why do we suck at curling all of a sudden? Why has the world closed the gap in curling with us? We're out here losing to everybody. We squeak by the Russian Olympic Committee or whatever, Jen Jones's ring. Jen Jones, okay, I don't want to do this because it's harsh to take a shot at curling. the game against Sweden, she choked. She could have won the game. It was right there. It was like a easy money, Jen Jones. You're supposed to. This is an easy double take for you. Choke, huge choke. And we did this whole measuring thing. I'm like, that was not a good shot. That was terrible. I can't tell, Blake, if it's like I'm paying attention to it. I don't know if Gushu and Jen Jones are just not as having a very good Olympics. If we want, do we need to start shrinking the rinks and have more skips represent? Like, we got to stop doing this thing where we just send the rink. It's like, no, four skips every single time. I don't know, well, but either
that's,
way.
That's been my argument forever is like, I don't really understand why you send a team instead of the best player. Like imagine for hockey, we just sent like the Erie Otters or like whoever the best non-NHL team was that day.
But they basically did.
Isn't the rest of the world closing the gap here? I need a curling expert to explain.
Yeah.
This is supposed to be something where we kick everybody's ass and we go, we're the curling country. Like, the rest of you step aside. We're all here now.
I understand.
Did we ever lose to Sweden before? Like, is this a thing?
I understand the Scandinavian countries catching up. Like, it feels like something they do there. But, yeah, when you're, like, when it's some of the other countries that, you know, on its surface, you'd be like, oh, are they just there because, like, you got to fill the field out and stuff? I don't know. The Gushu side's been fine. They're 4-2. Sweden is
4-2?
Like
that's not Canada.
I know.
That's
they're going to make it through, though.
Okay, well, tonight you can watch that against
Italy.
China. Okay, 8 p.m. See if
we lose to China in curling,
if they redeem themselves.
Honestly, we need to have one of these summits with Curling Canada like we had with Hockey Canada after they lost the one time.
Okay, here's the deal, though, Gushus of the world and Jen Jones of the world. You guys want to keep this thing going where it's you bring your friends and family, basically, as the team instead of just the skip powerhouse crew that Blake and JD are pitching here? You better win. better win. Otherwise,
Look, we can rename that expressway in St. John's, Mr. Gushu. We can rename that.
You better not lose. Okay. You better not lose.
That's tonight at 8 p.m. This Road to the Podium was brought to you by CertainTeed, the pro's choice for roofing, siding, drywall, insulation, and ceiling systems. CertainTeed, pro all the way. Let's take a break. Afterwards, let's get into a Monday morning A-list Valentine's Day edition. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The smartest takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Happy Valentine's Day, guys.
Thank you. That's the only happy Valentine's Day I'm going to get from a woman other than my mom today, which is going to be awkward when I get that text later. She'll definitely send it. Happy Valentine's Day, my son. I love you 100%.
Sweetheart.
Yeah.
Did you used to do the where you gave out the little Valentines when you're in like grade 4 and you wrote everyone's name on those little things? That was the best.
No,
I wish you still did that.
The level of dork you'd have to be to not give out those cards. Like, did you receive them?
You'd be secretly counting. Yeah. You're like, oh, I got 7.
No.
Becky only got 4.
No, that was those. I feel like that was my experience, if I can remember it properly, though, was more you got one from just about everybody. Like, everyone had cards, and you gave them out to everyone so that
And they were,
no
like,
one...
different. Like, one was SpongeBob, one was, like,
we're
NHL.
We're the first generation of, you know, that was everyone gets a Valentine's Day card. You don't leave out anybody. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone's your Valentine. Before that, it probably, like, you want to know hot steaks? Imagine what it was like being our parents. Imagine what the boomers went through for Valentine's Day. Like, you probably cut out a real Valentine's Day card, like a real one out of what's that paper called? The construction paper. You made it, and you actually gave it to somebody. You did a whole real Valentine. We're frauds for Valentine's Day. We had no stakes. Everybody was a winner. We all got participation trophies on Valentine's Day.
It's very sweet. Yeah, no, I don't have any Valentine's-related things in the A-list, but I do have some love-related things in the A-list, so let's get into it.
Now, it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong!
Bing bong!
Bing bong!
What's up, baby?
Two beautiful stories came out of the Super Bowl last night. I think one of them you're not going to like, and one of them you are going
to
like.
I sent it to you.
Okay, so you don't think I saw it myself? Yes, it is cringe. But Here's the good one. This is the good story of love. Van Jefferson wins the Super Bowl, immediately rushes off the field to go celebrate the birth of his son at the hospital. His wife had to actually leave early because she went into labor. And he goes, I got three prizes today. My wife, my son, and the Super Bowl.
So cute.
And it's just so beautiful how love just unites us all through sports. And, you know, maybe they'll name the baby something Super Bowl related.
Blake.
Lombardi.
Lombardi.
Have you started to notice that when Ailish does the A-list and she tells her Ailish's like soft tales, that she goes into a voice? She goes into a way of
I'm trying to coax
things.
You into liking it.
But yeah, that it's you think that you're trying to basically hypnotize us into believing that this is more interesting than it is. Here's the thing. He had a baby. That's what he did. Guess what? Everybody can do it. Congrats.
And he won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And
all
it was just beautiful.
So
if you were that worried about it?
Why,
I would have had more than four receptions for 23 yards. Get that thing over a little quicker.
Maybe he was distracted.
See, that's what I thought of. I had Van Jefferson longest
touchdown. I know you did.
And the worst part is, do you remember who else I flagged for that? Because they were even odds at the same time. And I said, both these guys are good plays. T. Higgins. I said both of those guys were the top air yards dudes, and T. Higgins ended up having it, shattering any hope of Van Jefferson doing it because he hits the 75-yarder, and you knew that it wasn't going to be a longer one. But I thought, had I known Van Jefferson had a wife who was basically in labor, he'd obviously be thinking about that. That's not going to be a positive. That's not a situation where, you know, you've lost somebody and you go out and you dominate, or, you know, you've got so. It's like, no. That's a real distracting thing. Your wife's in labor. What, you're going to the sideline and someone's telling you where she's at and what the delivery, the dilations. I don't know what it's like to have a kid, but those things I think are in there.
Dilations, yes. Yeah, I think that's exactly it. You dialate up the 590 on the radio. Yeah,
how dialed up is she, all right? I would have thought, I was devastated to hear that news. I felt like I should have been refunded for my ticket.
He's confusing snap counts with like the time between contractions and stuff.
Yes. I was upset at you, Van Jefferson. You should have disclosed that information for us gamblers. Congrats on your kid and all that, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, where was the advice for us gamblers? By the way, JD's Coward's Parlay smashes again, +300. It's fine. Just send me your winning tickets. Send me your winning tickets. Screenshots. Send them my way. Let me see them. Show Daddy
hashtag
the tickets.
Hashtag JD list.
Yeah, that's right. JD list.
Classic.
What's next?
Okay.
What other love do you have here?
This one. This is something I would never want to happen to me, but maybe it's a beautiful story. Taylor Rapp, after winning the Super Bowl ring, got on one knee and proposed to his girlfriend on the field, and they are now happily engaged and will celebrate this moment for the rest of their lives.
Okay, tell the truth.
I think it's awful.
Yeah,
as I said, I would never want this to happen to me. That and also being proposed to at like a sporting event on the Jumbotron.
Yeah.
Instant no.
So,
but it's a story of love.
I don't even really know how you get to this thought process, Mr. Rapp, that this is the good idea. The proposal is supposed to be something where, in my opinion, it's a special moment between just the two of you. But it's like you've kind of hijacked that and made it about you, right? Mm-hmm. Like the proposal is supposed to be about the woman.
She can't say no now either.
But not only can she not say no, it's just the... Okay.
Now that would be an A-list item.
It's your moment.
Gets shot down on the field.
Yeah, it's your moment, right? And so anytime you tell the proposal story, I know that they're going to spin it as, oh, it's so cool because he just won the Super Bowl. And then But really, you've taken your moment and just built it a bigger you moment as the athlete.
And there's not a lot of thought went into it. It's like, hey, I had this ring.
It's a
layup. Let's get married. But what if they had lost? Like, then he's going to have to do the work and he's going to have to propose to her at a different time.
Oh, grumble. I just
lucky
got
him.
This. Yeah. I was also upset because I had that guy for an interception. Rap.
Yeah.
I didn't know what he looked like, but I just knew that he had four picks.
You had his name somewhere.
He had four picks this year, and I thought Burrow – I thought exactly what was going to happen happened in that second half, but just that Burrow was going to chuck one up, not hold on to the football the entire time. He actually did the right thing, holding on to the ball, not turning it over. Zero turnovers in that game. But I thought he was going to throw one little moon ball up in the air that old Rapp would have been able to get under and pick one off. So I thought, yeah, kind of a bummer. You should have – it was just, again, another reminder. Both the guys that ended up with the post-game stories were two long-shot bet I had that missed. I did have Cooper Kupp MVP, though. Blake and I were in a blood feud at the end of the game after that Donald sack, and he texted me, I think Donald might get it. I was, no, Blake. I was really upset.
Okay, so somebody that had a lot of pregame narratives that we talked about for about 2 weeks hyping up was my guy, Tyler Boyd, who was rumored to be having a night of passionate lovemaking with Anita, a pop star. And you know what? He hit the over on his receiving yards. He had 48 receiving yards and 5 receptions. So he definitely proved that you can have a nice night before a big game and not have jello legs or ever, however you guys explained it.
Yeah, so I would say that this is a
push at best.
Yeah, it's a push. I know you won your bet, but he had 5 receptions for 48 yards.
That's all that matters. It was my lock of the week.
He averaged on the season 4.2 receptions for 52 yards. So one extra reception, a little under his usual yards.
You guys said he was going to have the worst game of his career, and he was going to show up and suck.
That's just not true.
Also, I like that you're borrowing from the old JD playbook, though, of, hey, no one's ever going to go back and listen to the podcast and get the truth. So
you
just lie about
said
what
that
your
there
compatriots
is no
say.
Way that he is going to have a good game. I will go back and listen to it. We have people in the text line agreeing that you were all over Tyler Boyd having a
go
trash game.
Oh,
and
my God.
And he hit my over bet.
You want to talk about loneliness? Valentine's Day, you go back in our podcast looking for us making a prediction about Tyler Boyd. You got to do some reevaluation. What's going on with you? Even for the simps, that's low. Although, Ailish, what if some of the simps do that for you? You got to open up the DM for that simp, you know? Like,
yeah,
I will take
the transcripts, okay?
Maybe it is a
love
story.
Send me transcripts.
Beginning. It's a very early
phase. It could be a love story beginning.
We also, before we could conclude
good for you,
anything,
Tyler Boyd.
We need to know we need confirmation of consummation.
Oh, it happened.
Like we don't know.
Yeah, what? We're going to be like the Middle Ages where we all gather around
should
the
Should I DM
to make sure
Tyler Boyd?
Maybe he heard our discussion and was like, you know what? I better not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could ask for research purposes. I will try my best to get in contact with Tyler Boyd or his agents to see if there was
just
the night of passionate
love
making.
Did you have sex in his DMs? See what he said. So my only thing on this is, yes, Ailish, he hit your prop, but I would say that his drop in that game was one of the bigger.
Yeah, when that happened, I thought, he's daydreaming. He's reminiscing.
That was a really bad drop at a pretty crucial time. That
bad.
Was the only time in the second half the Bengals started to move the ball, and he dropped it.
For no reason, just dropped it. Real tough.
No
I texted you guys right away. Like,
weak legs.
Oops.
Yeah.
Weak legs.